Hello, friends. This is Karis from the future. We recorded this episode way back in May, nearly 7 weeks ago now. So the news segment, it's pretty old. That's why we did the bonus episode for you guys last week. So the reason it's taken me so long to edit this is because I reached out to Tom Kelly from Clean Cut Audio. So he runs a YouTube channel and a podcast of the same name. His website is in the show notes, where he helps podcasters to improve their audio. So please, if you're interested in podcasting at all, you should totally check him out. His videos are really interesting. They're so informative and they're just really helpful. And oh my goodness, he's such a nice dude. So I emailed Tom for some advice on how to improve our audio quality, and he super kindly offered to mix this episode for free. He is a professional audio engineer. So yeah, I had to wait a while for him to do it. I didn't want to hassle him and all that. But eventually he sent me this final mix. So you may not hear a difference, but he really cleaned up David's audio, which we get from Skype because right now he doesn't have a microphone. So we are planning to launch a Patreon really soon though. So if you want to help us improve our audio, follow us on social media, consider supporting us on there. So we don't have to record Skype calls, you know, if you want to. But we love you guys so much. Thanks for your patience. So yeah, this episode is old, but we hope you stick around, and hopefully in a few weeks we'll be chatting about Dark Road. So take care, friends. Welcome everybody. This is a new episode of Kingdom Mind, a podcast where we talk about Kingdom Hearts and the Kingdom of God. My name is Karis.
And I'm David.
Excellent. So we are gonna chat a little bit about the news to begin with, except there's like barely anything because of what's going on. So there's not a whole lot of news. Just did a quick scratch around on Twitter. Union Cross has got a bunch of updates. People are freaking out over Twitter because there's a character with a white coat, which means something.
Yes, everything means something.
And I don't know what, because I'm a horrible fan. What does it mean? Who knows? But is it cool? Sure. Although I did see something about, is the white coat the same as the white sheet that Ventus is like wrapped in? And I was like, So you never know. I would like that to be true.
Yeah, so the lines on the hood of the coat look like the lines on the hood of the black coats, which makes me think that it's, so a lot, I think some people have theorized it's the reverse of the dark coats, the black coats, which protect you against darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the light coats protect you against light.
Oh, I mean, that would make sense. Yeah.
The best theory I've heard was HMK. I don't know if you follow his YouTube channel, but he was saying that because the character who appears in the white coats is dead, like truly dead, like not just like a heartless, but like dead.
Okay.
And it takes place in Marluxia's dream. It's Marluxia's sister, Strelitzia. So in the final world, we hear that the edges of death and sleep touch. So if she's dead, maybe that's how she can communicate to him through his dreams.
Oh.
So Ansem says in the first game that all hearts and worlds return to Kingdom Hearts when they go, like, they come from Kingdom Hearts and they return to Kingdom Hearts. That seems to be implied throughout the series. So she's dead. Her only residing place has to be Kingdom Hearts.
Right. And
if Kingdom Hearts is light, as we learned in the first game, it's light, maybe the residents of Kingdom Hearts all wear those white coats.
Okay, gotcha. That's cool. So everyone in Kingdom Hearts is walking about with a white coat on.
I wonder if we'll ever, I mean, I feel like we will at some point, but like actually get to see Kingdom Hearts, like go there in a future game.
Yeah, I feel like that would be pretty epic. I mean, it's the name of the series, so I feel like it's it's got to happen at some point. No, that's really fun. In other news, so I posted this on Twitter because I thought it was hilarious. So my church YouTube account that I've been using to live stream our church services, it's just filled with Kingdom Hearts like content at the moment because I keep like looking up Kingdom Hearts videos when I'm supposed to be, I don't know, live streaming. So So one that like popped up was what's called Why I Can't Introduce Kingdom Hearts to My Friends by Grandpa Sweaters. And it's just a bunch of like weird lines from the series, like kind of awkward dialogue. It's just like a compilation. The Kingdom Hearts in no context. And that just like popped up on my church YouTube channel. I was like, okay, I've definitely been the one that's been in charge of this, like, go figure. So I don't know. I just thought that was really hilarious. And I was telling my brother about it. And then also in our last episode, I mentioned that I wasn't going to get Final Fantasy VII Remake, or I was, but I was going to wait until my store opens up, and I did not do that. Last week, I just had a moment of insanity. I'm like, do you know what? I'm just going to buy it. I ended up finding a really good deal on eBay, though, and it had like a voucher, so I got £2.60 off or something. So it ended up being less than £50. It was like £49 something. So pretty good. It's been fun so far. I've not got very far. I think I'm on chapter 4. It's pretty much like a hack and slash. And my brother commented, because they have chests in the game, like in Kingdom Hearts as well. And he mentioned that Cloud just opens a chest normally, instead of Sora does his little flourish with the Keyblade every time. Like, Cloud just bends down and opens it. And I just thought that was so funny. Like, yeah, that's about right.
At first I wondered if it was necessary to do that, to open the chest. Like, is that like a special thing? Does it have to be hit a certain way? But then I remembered in the first game, he just taps them.
Oh, yes.
So I feel like he's just like showing off. He's just like, hey, guys, watch me open this chest here.
It's so funny. Like, and Cloud is just, it's just bending down and just taking it out. Like, it's no big deal. I don't know. It's really funny. Although it does like take away from the kind of realism of the game, because everything else is like pretty like dark and kind of gritty, and he's just like finding a chest and just like, oh yeah, I guess I'll open this kind of thing. I don't know. I guess his like nonchalant kind of way of doing it is pretty in character.
That's true. I did watch most of the cutscenes on YouTube maybe a week ago or two. It was pretty interesting. I wasn't planning on buying the game, so I just went ahead and watched the cutscenes. I feel like this game, there's some like, especially with Kingdom Hearts games or other Square games, where sometimes I feel like the story works pretty well, even if you just watch the cutscenes. But I feel like this one, I could tell that it's really designed to be played. You know, I think I probably missed out on the experience of just playing through it.
Yeah, it is really fun so far. But like I said, I'm not very far in, so no spoilers. But yeah, no, it's good so far. I do really like just the world building. Like, the animation's beautiful. Like, you walking around and there's like street cats and things, and just in the neighborhood. It's good, man. I enjoy it.
How does it compare to Kingdom Hearts 3?
Oh my goodness. Well, they're kind of like chalk and cheese, really. They're a very different kettle of fish. One thing that happens that you'll probably have noticed is that he swears occasionally. So far, like in the first, I want to say, like, couple hours in that I am, it's pretty like PG-13, 12, I guess, language.
I don't think it ever gets above like a PG-13 language.
Interesting. So that's different, and we care about it because we're Christians. except do we? I don't particularly, but you know, whatever. This is a Christian podcast, so flower bed. Do you understand that reference?
No, I'm just laughing.
Okay, great. So in the Babylon Bee podcast, they have this guy called Dave DeAndrea, and he's the one that does the intro voice. And every so often, if they have a guest on that like cusses, you just hear his voice go flower bed in his really deep radio voice.
Actually, I think I do know. I had a vague memory because I have listened to their podcast before. So yes, I do remember now.
It's so funny. Like, it catches me off guard every time.
That reminds me of, did you ever watch, did you ever see Freakazoid?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh man, I'm old. It was like the same generation as like Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain. It was produced by Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
It was this really off the wall, crazy cartoon that just like super zany humor and breaking the fourth wall all the time. It was really kind of ahead of its time, but they would do this thing where it was the whole show is basically a satire on superheroes, but it was really a satire on everything, not just superheroes. They would satirize like politics, and they would satirize like old movies and musicals and anything they could think of. So they were like making fun of the way, I guess, movies are edited on TV and stuff. So like, Freakazoid began to, there's one episode where Freakazoid began to fight. Like somebody would pop up, like the network censor somebody, and say, well, this fight is a little bit too violent for young viewers, so we're going to show this scenery of flowers or something. It's like suddenly cuts to this scenery of a flower field, or like a scenery of like a fish in a fish tank or something.
And then it cuts back
and the fight's over.
Nice. I feel like that might be what it's calling back to, but I just never got that reference. So I'm learning new things all the time. And we are so off track. What were we talking about? I don't even know. Oh, we were comparing Kingdom Hearts 3 to Final Fantasy 7. Yeah, and I mentioned swearing. What else? I guess the art style is just like, it's kind of different. Like it's less cartoony and it's much more realism. It's much more what the Remind secret ending is kind of like the Lemika ending, I guess, with like Zora. It's kind of that kind of tone, I suppose, they're going for. But at the same time, like there is also a lot of humor and a lot of lightheartedness and just characters being sassy to each other, and it's fun so far. But like I said, I'm still like not far in, so I can't really make a huge comparison. There is magic involved, but it's a lot less. I don't know. There's no summoning of Disney rides. Let's put it that way.
The magic system in Kingdom Hearts does come from Final Fantasy. I don't know which Final Fantasy games it incorporates, but yeah, the summoning system also comes from Final Fantasy. So
yeah, I mean, he just got a Materia thing that summons. So I've not tried that out yet, but maybe I will. Maybe I will actually summon something, because I never did that in Kingdom Hearts 3 at all. Which brings us actually to the main segment of this episode. We were going to chat about the Kingdom Hearts 3 and Remind callbacks, references, and foreshadowing video by TitanTrainer13. And I asked him on Twitter, I was like, hey, is it cool if we talk about your video? And he was like, yeah, go ahead. And I said, do you want to be on the podcast? And he's like, I'm too busy, so I'm sorry. But maybe we'll get him in the future. I'll wrangle him and be like, come on our podcast. But regardless, it's a really great video, and it will be in the description, and probably the first one that he did as well, because they are both just very comprehensive and just filled with references in Kingdom Hearts 3 and also Remind and the Lemika episode, of just a bunch of things that happened in previous games. And there's just so many. And I really love that in this video he included a bunch of comments from other Kingdom Hearts fans. It seems like a really real community effort to collate all these things together. And of course, he included your theory that we covered in episode 2.
Yes, he did. And I commented on that on his first video. So I was happy to see that he put it in his second one.
And it was actually interesting, because not only that, but there were like several other callbacks from the Pirates world as well, which I thought were interesting. Like there seems to be something there, like a bunch of references, which I was like, oh, I didn't pick up on any of this. How?
Yeah, there were so many things I pointed out, especially in the first video, that I thought I knew the series well, but it really shows you how well, actually, it gave me a little bit more respect for the story in Kingdom Hearts 3. Because I think the first time I played through it, I was a little bit disappointed. But then I think seeing how much detail, how much I paid attention to detail in terms of calling back to previous games and giving payoffs to things, I have to give them some props for that.
Oh, yeah. It's actually huge. It's actually a massive achievement. I'm not going to lie. Basically everything he talks about, I didn't see the first time around, apart from the Piper Fruit, like that was obvious, but everything else I didn't necessarily like pick up on the first time. It was really satisfying to know that Nomura has been building up to this and putting in all these nice little details. It really shows how much heart and effort and determination is there.
What were your favorite callbacks?
Yeah, there's one at the start of the video that he talks about, when they're in the toy box world and Buzz is saying, what if we end up just like her, forgetting ourselves and attacking each other? He's talking about the doll, the creepy doll. And then it's like a direct reference to when Shion's forgotten who she is and she attacks Axel, before Sora unlocks the memories. And the OG tweet that he like got that reference from pointed out that a lot of the stuff that he talks about in this video happens in Disney World, and that stuff is significant. And I think that's a really cool. It's just like with the pirates theory as well. And I think that was part of my frustration with the game the first time around, is I think because going to all the Disney worlds is done in such a linear way, whereas in Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, like they go back to different places, like they go back to the Colosseum like a few times and do a few different things. Whereas this time it's like you beat one Disney world, like you're on to the next one. It kind of feels like you do this and then you do this. To me, playing it, like it felt pretty mindless. But actually there's a lot of stuff in there that I just didn't notice.
I liked one that he pointed out in the first video. Like there's these, well, there's a bunch that are just these little lines of dialogue that you think are just throwaway lines, but then they end up coming back later. There's so many to pick from, but there was one that I remembered where Saix, I can't remember who he's talking about. I think he might be talking about Xion. I believe it's in 358 over 2 days. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But he was talking about how what happens to somebody when they lose all sense of purpose. And like he describes, I'd have to have it in front of me, but he describes like their quad, like what happens to that person when they lose all sense of purpose. And then when he's fighting, when his nobody dies in Kingdom Hearts 3 and he apologized to Axel, he tells him, "I lost all sense of purpose."
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think I remember that now, actually. Yeah, that's awesome. There's a lot of small, really small kind of visual references as well. Like when Ariel is saying in Kingdom Hearts 2 that she wants to go to other worlds, and then you can use her as a summon in Kingdom Hearts 3, and it's like Sora's given her the opportunity to see the other worlds.
That was really cool.
There's a bunch of other ones, like when Sora's rushing to Kairi to like protect her, and it's a callback to when she does that in Kingdom Hearts 2 as well. And he like gives her a big hug and things.
Yeah, the timing and the animation is really similar. And I think that was one where it kind of felt a little bit familiar, but I couldn't quite place it until I saw it. I was like, oh, that's exactly what she did to him when she first saw him.
Yes. Yeah, like you, like that's something where I was like, oh, yeah, this does seem familiar, but I don't know from where. Or why necessarily, but then when you see them side by side, the comparison is like beat for beat, more or less. And also when Riku's reaching out to Naminé, I think I mentioned that on here, but it's just like when he reaches out to Sora, Kingdom Hearts 1, to call him to the darkness, but it's just a completely different meaning.
Yeah, well, it definitely shows how much he's grown as a character. I've really come to like Riku a lot more as a character, especially in Kingdom Hearts 3. I think at first I kind of thought of him as just like the stereotypical like emo anime lone wolf character.
Yeah.
He's had probably the most character development of any character in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, you really see that. I mean, because one of the first scenes you see when you turn the game on is Riku holding his hand out to Sora like that, which is emblematic of him being taken by the darkness. And then one of the last things we see in Kingdom Hearts 3 is of him holding his hand out to Naminé, which is showing just how far he's come.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's almost, I'm just thinking about this now just off the top of my head, but it's almost like his end goal was the same, because he was always out to protect Kairi.
Mm-hmm.
He just thought that he needed to submit to the darkness to be able to do that. But actually, like, the opposite is true. And, like, him kind of, like, holding his hand out to Naminé and being like, you know, you're in the realm of light or whatever. I can't remember. I don't think he even says anything, but, oh no, he says that to Aqua. But anyway, like, the way that he approaches those characters in, like, such a kind way is, like, the same
mm-hmm.
motivation that he always had, is, like, to protect those around him. But he's doing it from a place of love rather than, like, being in fear and intimidation, I suppose.
Or jealousy of Sora.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Well, they put that in the character files for Riku, where he writes that he was jealous of Sora. Well, I mean, he says that he was jealous of Sora, but they take that from his dialogue from the end of Kingdom Hearts 2, where he admits to Sora that he was jealous of him.
I don't remember that at all, but I'm sure you're right.
It was after they beat Xemnas, and then they're just kind of walking, and they end up in at the shore in the Dark World. I forget what it's called. And so on the either on the way there or while they're sitting there on the shore, I think Sora tells him, you know, I was jealous of you. And Riku's like, no, I was the one that was jealous of you, actually.
Oh, cool. He is one of the deepest characters, I would say, for sure. Oh, I thought this was so interesting. The part in Kingdom Hearts 3 when, again, when they're also in the Pirates world, but Luxor just shows up and he says this line about such compulsive behavior will bring you nothing but sorrow. And then there was someone who theorized that that could be a foreshadowing of Sora abusing his power of waking to bring back Kairi. And I was like, oh. And that makes a lot of sense because Luxor is somehow connected to that whole scenario in the Limit Cut episode. So I think he's onto something. It's all of these like random lines that when you're watching, like when you're playing the game, you're just thinking, what is he saying? Like, what does he mean by any of this? And like, I know I've always been that way when I'm playing Kingdom Hearts, and I've just kind of gone with it. I'm like, yeah, this dialogue doesn't make any sense. But actually, when you pull it all out and you like compare it to a bunch of other things that have happened before, like it falls into place. And you're like, oh, Nomura, you're a genius. How are you doing this?
Yeah, I feel like they kind of go into philosophy mode a little bit in the dialogue a lot. It actually, in a weird way, reminds me of Christopher Nolan's movies.
Oh, nice.
Characters kind of break out into this like Shakespearean philosophical monologues. But it's kind of cool in a way. It can get a little tedious at times. I feel like it's a little bit more tedious in Chris Nolan's movies, although I love his movies. But I feel like Kingdom Hearts has a good way of like not making it so on the nose where it's super obvious. So it's just interesting enough to make it like a little bit more watchable and more entertaining. Keep that air of mystery around it.
I think a way that Nomura does that actually is a really fun detail when other characters don't understand what they're saying. Because like when Ventus is talking about Sora and he just says that he's the second chance, which is like a callback to whenever Sora's a child and he finds like Ventus as a piece of his heart, and Ventus is kind of saying this dialogue about, oh yeah, my second chance. And he's like, oh, I get it. You were my second chance. And Sora's just like, huh?
Yeah.
He just doesn't get it.
Dude, I don't know what you're talking about, but all right.
Yeah. So I think that's fun as well. And that's kind of why it works on some occasions, because the other characters don't get it. They're not in on the joke.
Yeah, I think one of the first games where things started getting really confusing was Chain of Memories. And I know Dahl has a line somewhere in there where he's just like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you and me both, Donald.
Oh man, Chain of Memories is... So Kingdom Hearts is infamous for its really, really sappy dialogue. Sometimes it's great and it works, and they hit the right balance. Chain of Memories went way off the deep end on the sappiness. Like, I mean, there's just so much of it, but I cut that down as much as possible in my edit. So if anyone's interested in watching Chain of Memories cut down to about, I think I cut it down to like 2 hours maybe. So it's like a movie, and I cut out as much of the dialogue as possible while still keeping the essential parts. So yeah, go check it out.
Awesome, I'll do that. That will be in the show notes too, and I will watch it after this for sure. I feel like there was another moment where that happened that he pointed out in the video. Oh, it was whenever Terra and Riku are like chatting and they're having like a secret joke about when Terra like visited Destiny Islands when Riku was a boy and he gave him the Keyblade and he told him, oh, to keep it a secret. And then Sora goes off. No, sorry, Riku goes off and Sora's like, hey, who was that guy? And Riku's like, it's a secret. And so that totally happens where in Kingdom Hearts 3, Terra and Riku are having this little joke. And then Ven runs in. She's like, and he's like, hey, what's going on? What are you talking about? And they're like, it's a secret. And they totally smirk about it. That was fun.
I got the first part, But then I did not get the second part where he said it's a secret. So that was pretty clever. But I love how Riku actually remembers that. Like, it was like a really important moment in his life. Because like Sora was the same age as him, but he doesn't remember meeting Aqua. And Kairi was also met Aqua, but and she was the same age, but she doesn't remember meeting Aqua either. I think it just goes to show like how much smarter. Well, I think Riku might be a little bit older than them. Still, I think it just shows like how much, like, I don't know if it's smarter or like, I feel like it gives his character a little bit more depth.
Mm-hmm. I've got a feeling that in the first game, Kairi and Sora are supposed to be 14, and I feel like he's 16. I could be making that up, but I'm sure that's right.
Yeah, maybe someone can check on that for us. But I feel like I remember reading that at least in like the little game manual.
I read it in there too. I'm sure that's what it said when I was a kid and I played Kingdom Hearts 1 on the PS2. Yeah, it makes sense obviously that he would remember that. That brings us into our third segment, actually, because part of what we wanted to talk about was the big question about destiny or free will.
Easy stuff. Definitely not controversial at all.
Nope. And this is probably one of the deepest, like, biggest questions of the Bible. And it's really interesting as well because I don't even know whereabouts you stand on the issue. Let's jump into that, I guess.
Yeah, so I want to talk about it because I've noticed that, well, first of all, I think a common cultural objection to Christianity, particularly to Reformed Christianity or to Calvinism, is that, oh, well, you believe that God just predestined people. That means that we don't really have a choice, that we're all just puppets, yada, yada, yada.
Mm.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think that's correct, but fair enough. Okay, but here's something that I noticed, though, in the very same culture that doesn't like the aspect of God's sovereignty also has kind of a romantic fascination with destiny. They don't want a person to be in charge, but rather just an external, immaterial, impersonal force that they call destiny. I noticed that because Kingdom Hearts has a lot of references to destiny, even more so in Kingdom Hearts 3. But I know that you made some notes for Kingdom Hearts 1, so we'll probably keep this conversation going in future podcasts. And, you know, other shows like Lost, I don't know if you've ever seen Lost, but it's a really good show if you haven't seen it.
I have not.
If you like Kingdom Hearts, you would like Lost because Lost has a lot of very similar themes. And sometimes I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, Nomura has to have seen this show because they're so similar in some parts. I actually wanted to make a video on how they're similar. But Lost also deals a lot with that question of, it's basically the whole show, actually. It never really answers the question directly, but it does a good job of kind of raising good points on both sides of this whole question of destiny and free will, or some would call it choice and destiny, moral responsibility, that kind of thing.
Right.
I see a lot in fantasy media, especially this idea of like, there's something innate in us that kind of longs for that idea that we are destined for something greater than ourselves. And that it's a weird comfort that you can take that it's not you that's in control somehow. Like, you're still responsible, but then somehow it's also not you that's in control. Like you have this destiny that's set out before you, and it's your job to follow through with that. So there you get kind of that tension where it's like, it's your destiny, it will happen, but then you have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's interesting that you bring up Lost. I haven't watched it, but a show that was around at the same time is Heroes, and I was a massive fan of Heroes. I don't know if you watched that as well.
I watched like the first two seasons, I think.
Yeah, it's funny because everybody's like, the first season's the only one that's good. But I watched it with my sister when we were in high school, and I was like 12, 13, and I was just obsessed with it. So I don't know. It's probably just nostalgia, but I like the whole show, despite the fact that people are like, nope, it's only season one that's good. But again, they have that thing about Destiny, and the main character, Peter, is like obsessed with this idea that it was like destined for greatness. And there's a character as well called Isaac Mendes who can paint the future. That's like his superpower.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yes. And so that's like a big thing is like, is this going to happen? Is it not? Like, well, it has to be because, you know, everything else that he's painted is like come true and all these things. Yeah, they kind of play with that idea. I don't know. I think it's rife in our culture, even Star Wars. And I think the newest trilogy is so weird because like Rian Johnson kind of just tosses that idea out the window and he's like, no, it's not about the name. It's not about the legacy. Like, let the past die. Kill it if you have to. And then J.J. Abrams comes in, he's like, nope, Rey was a Palpatine all along. Spoilers for Rise of Skywalker if you've somehow not watched it already. It's really frustrating. I do like the movie, and I will say that I like the trilogy, not as a trilogy, but I like every film independent of itself. Together, they don't work at all.
They're like great movies as prequels or sequels to movies that don't exist.
Yeah, true. But anyway, we're getting off track. But no, so like that whole Destiny thing is like everywhere, and especially Kingdom Hearts because they literally come from an island called Destiny Island.
Oh yeah, well there you go.
So there you go. We can go home now. So my answer to the question is, you know, Destiny or free will, and my answer is yes. I mean, it's a paradox. Of course it is, and it doesn't make sense from a human perspective, but I think the Bible is very clear that the Lord has given us a will, and he is also omnipotent and sees the end from the beginning because he's outside of time. Mm-hmm. And Paul talks about that. And, you know, there's a famous verse in Romans 8 where he talks about, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to become conformed to the image of his son so that he would be the firstborn among many brethren. And those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And these whom he justified, he also glorified. So there's that going on. But then, like in Genesis 2:17, God is saying, but from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. So it's a choice. Like, you can do either of those things. And Adam and Eve choose to sin and ultimately break humanity's relationship with God. I don't know. There's a choice. But there's also a predestination that happens, and those two things are happening at once, and it boggles my mind.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're all right on the nose there. That's kind of my position as well. I was actually watching a video on this earlier from Wretched. I don't know if you've ever seen Wretched with Todd Friel.
No.
Radio program and a YouTube channel. It's really good.
Fun.
You should check it out. But he was talking about this today, and you know, even a Calvinist would say that Adam and Eve at least had some sort of free will. If anybody had a free will, Adam and Eve did, because they had that choice. Now, they would say that we're in bondage to our nature, our sinful nature. But anyway, I'm not going to get super deep into that right now, but I want to affirm what you were saying, that first of all, and this is what Todd Friel was saying, that you know, if God is God, we should expect there to be certain things about him and the world that he created that we can't fully understand.
Sure.
I think I like to think of it as, I've heard this analogy of, if you're a two-dimensional being and if you're living on a flat piece of paper and you were to see a three-dimensional object, you wouldn't know what you were seeing. You wouldn't know how to describe it. It would look contradictory to you. Depending on the shape of the object, it might look like it's in two places at once. And so you might think, well, that's two different objects. You wouldn't have any frame of reference to understand this, the same object intersecting the paper in two different points.
That's a cool analogy.
There's this whole YouTube rabbit hole you can go down on like four-dimensional objects. Because actually, mathematically speaking, there are indeed four dimensions of space,
mm-hmm.
which is mind-boggling to us because we don't even have a frame of reference to understand what that would look like.
Sure.
Same way, like if 3D sphere were just passed through a 2D plane, it would just look like a circle changing size. If a 4D sphere were to pass through our three-dimensional space, it would just look like a 3D sphere that's changing size as it passes through. So it just looked like a sphere that appears out of nowhere, grows bigger, and then disappears as it leaves our space. All that to say that, you know, if God is at least aware of four dimensions, because he created the universe, and maybe he exists in a fourth dimensional space or even beyond that, you know, when he is passing, when he's entering into our reality, what we're going to see is going to appear contradictory to us at some point. It's going to be like, I don't quite understand what I'm seeing. I don't quite have the right categories to describe it. And so our relationship to him is going to be similar to that as well. So when you're talking about the both and, that there's both a choice and there's a destiny, you see that a few times in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, the New Testament. So you see that kind of apparently paradoxical nature in the burning bush, where Moses encounters God in a bush that's burning, but also not burning.
Yeah.
It's on fire, but it's not being consumed. So it appears to be a contradiction. How can it be on fire if it's not being consumed? And you see that in Jesus being fully God and fully man. Well, how is that possible? Or how is God three persons and one being? And I think John MacArthur said, like, when he was asked a question about destiny and free will, predestination, he said, let me answer your question with another question. He said, who's responsible for our sanctification? And if for listeners who don't know what that means, sanctification is just like the process in a Christian's life of becoming more like Christ, becoming holier, more like him, that our lives are changing because of the Holy Spirit in our lives. So most Christians would say, well, it's me, but it's also the Holy Spirit. Like, I couldn't do it if the Holy Spirit wasn't in me, and he's actually making me do these things. But I'm also responsible for doing these things. MacArthur was like, instead of answering your confusion, I just like to spread your confusion around some more.
It's like when I was at university, we had a guest speaker come to our Christian Union meeting. It's like a campus ministry thing. And he asked this question about, are people good or bad, fundamentally? And everyone kind of said they were bad. And I put my hand up and I was like, no, yous are all wrong. Like, we are good. And he was like, well, how'd you figure? And I'm like, because we're made in the image of God. But everyone else was just thinking, yeah, we're messed up because we're sinful. And I'm like, well, actually, no, we are both those things. And I think it's interesting because Riku, at the very start of King Hearts 1, he also asked this question. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but like at the very beginning, I'll put the audio in, but he just has his little speech and he says,
it's just, I've always wondered why we're here on this island. If there are any other worlds out there, why did we end up on this one? And suppose there are other worlds, then ours is just a little piece of something much greater. So, we could have just as easily ended up somewhere else, right?
I don't know.
Exactly. That's why we need to go out there and find out. Just sitting here won't change a thing. It's the same old stuff. So let's go.
So Riku here, he's kind of saying, let's exercise our free will. Let's take our destiny into our own hands. Let's make a decision to choose to visit other worlds, to go see what's out there. But then he begins by asking, why are we here? Like, do we have a purpose? Why are we on this island?
To decide that we should be born here and not somewhere else.
Sure. So it's tied up in the question of why has God created us? And if he has, is he in control of our every move? Like, what's going on with that? But then at the same time, he's also saying, let's go do this. Let's visit other worlds. At the very beginning of these games, Nomura is just throwing this question out there. And I don't know if he's consciously doing it or if he's just, again, just writing some philosophical sounding stuff. I don't know what his motivation for writing this is. But I just think it's fascinating. And I just sat there and like thought about this for ages.
And I feel like Sora kind of hints at this duality too, a little bit in Kingdom Hearts 3. He kind of like, he tries to rewrite destiny in a sense where he goes back in time and he changes everyone's fates and saves their lives and creates a new timeline. But, and I can't remember, I don't have it in front of me, but there's a line somewhere towards the end of the game where he talks about I think he was talking to Xehanort, where he says that, like, a true hero accepts their path of destiny and doesn't try to change it.
Mm.
Which seems contradictory, because Sora definitely tried to change it.
Yeah.
But he's also criticizing Xehanort for not accepting his fate, his destiny, essentially.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, it's weird to think about, because say we just kind of woke up one day and we're like, let's just accept our destiny, let's just, you know, let things happen to us. It's like, we would never do anything. So, like, God has designed us in such a way that we have a motivation to do things, and we have decisions we have to make every day, like, what am I going to eat for breakfast? So if I'm just going to be like, oh, I'll let destiny decide, it's like, well, you're going to starve, you know, after a while. Like, it seems like a stupid thing, but, like, you're making a choice. So I don't really understand people that think that there's not a free will, because how did you decide, like, to get up in the morning? Like, how did you decide what to, like, what clothes to put on or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah. So I've done a little bit more research into that, and also through my roommate who's going to Reform Seminary. But, you know, what they would say is that it's not that we don't have choices or we don't have moral responsibility, but the way they define free will is that we're not totally free. Like, there's always something that influences us on how we behave. So I think what most people mean by free will is that we have a choice, a real choice. And so I think even Calvinists would agree that, yes, we do have choices. But what they would say is that our will is not totally free, as in a sense that it's completely independent of anything, that we can just do literally whatever we want. We can't actually do that. So as the Bible says, before we know in Christ, in Galatians and Romans, we're slaves to sin. So a slave implies that you can't do whatever you want. You're forced to do something. But then we become slaves to Christ. Again, you haven't left the position of slavery. You're just a slave to another master, a better master.
Mm. Gotcha.
It's about as deep as I'm willing to go on this podcast.
I feel like that's pretty much as deep as I can understand. Yeah, so then later on, when Sora winds up in Traverse Town and the Final Fantasy characters find him, Leon and Yuffie and Aerith, Leon's got this bee in his bonnet about the fact that Sora's the chosen one, and they keep, like, pointing this out, like, different people keep saying. He's like,
still hard to believe that you, of all people, are the chosen one. Well, I suppose beggars can't be choosers.
And then later on, he says,
the Heartless have great fear of the Keyblade. That's why they'll keep coming after you, no matter what.
Well, I didn't ask for this.
The Keyblade chooses its master, and it chose you.
And then even Maleficent mentions that the Keyblade chose him, and will it be he who conquers the darkness, or will the darkness swallow him? Either way, he could be quite useful. So all these people are acknowledging that Sora is the chosen one, that it was specifically the Keyblade that chose him, which I think really ties in with a bunch of things we've already talked about on the podcast, like Sora being a messianic figure, the Keyblade being like the Holy Spirit. But he's still like, I didn't ask for this. But then it's still him. It's his burden. So I think that's really interesting, because sometimes we don't seem to choose our destinies, but we are just thrust in a situation. So I guess the question, what it comes down to, is like, how do we respond to that? To what we find ourselves in every day, whether it's like our choice or not, I guess. So yeah, that's something that I noticed.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think definitely ties in what we're talking about. Kind of reminds me of the Chronicles of Narnia. I don't know if you've read the books, but there's a scene in The Silver Chair where the two kids who go to Narnia, Eustace and Jill, they end up in Narnia, end up there after they called out to Aslan to bring them to Narnia. And Jill is speaking with Aslan, and he mentions that he called them. She said, no, I thought that we called you. And he said, you would not have called me if I had not called you first.
Mm.
It's really interesting. I think Lewis was definitely not a Calvinist, but, you know, you can't deny that language is there in Scripture. You know, I think in the Gospel of John, Jesus talks about calling out, or those whom he called, Well, I mean, it is there in Ephesians, right? Those who he called, he also predestined. It's Ephesians or Romans?
Romans, yeah.
There's a language of calling a lot in the Gospel of John. Jesus calling out to those whom the Father has given him.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to be like in Kingdom Hearts, I don't really know what like side of the debate they're kind of on. They don't seem to have a side. It seems to be both things that they're kind of talking about, because there's another moment in Kingdom Hearts 1 when Sora, Donald, and Goofy end up in Hollow Bastion, and Riku kind of challenges Sora's claim to be the Keyblade Master, and he says, "Let the Keyblade choose. Only the Keyblade Master can open the secret door and change the world." So he's kind of challenging the idea of destiny that he had to begin with, and he's kind of challenging like Sora's right to be the Keyblade Master. And it's like in this moment he's rejecting that destiny is already written and that he can just forge it on his own. And it's kind of a question of like who is stronger. So I think that idea is there as well. But then I think it comes back around and it's like Sora is the true Keyblade Master all along, that he is chosen and it is his destiny ultimately to stop Ansem.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot, I'm sure, questions that Nomura himself has and musings that he's kind of inserted into his games.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting how like specific these references are, and how we can find how we can question things in our own lives through like playing a video game, and what we can get out of that is really cool. And that's kind of why I wanted to do this podcast in the first place, I guess, is like to explore these themes and ideas.
Yeah, definitely. And I think stories in general, the best stories will always touch on these subjects, because I think the best stories are the ones that reflect the reality that we all deep down we know that we're in, because we all know deep down that we're part of a story like this.
Yeah, I suppose they resonate because he has chosen us, like from the act of Jesus dying for our sin.
Yeah, I think, you know, the cool thing about Christianity, regardless of whether you're a Calvinist or an Arminian, is that these truths or these things that I think we find attractive in a story in a game like Kingdom Hearts are not just relegated to fantasy. Like, you don't have to only experience them while playing a video game or watching a movie or reading a book. That if you are a Christian, you believe these things are true, then you're experiencing these things on a daily basis. Like, this is not just fantasy, this is reality. And I think that's one of the cool things about being a Christian, is that we have an objective way with which to see the world and to understand that the greater spiritual reality that we're in, that it's not just what we see in front of us all the time.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's another part of our nature, is that the Bible is written in such a way that it's exciting and it's compelling, like to those who have eyes to see, like who the Holy Spirit is revealing things to us. But that stories, and so like God's put in us a creative mind and a way in which we can experience things, that creativity affects us in a certain way because we are made in his image. And because he finds glory in music and art and so on, and these things can be used to glorify him ultimately.
I think it all makes sense when you believe that we're made to understand these things, that if we're made to live in a world that really is this way, then it makes sense that we would resonate with creative things that reflect that greater reality. Well, that's all for this episode, guys. This has been Kingdom Minds. I'm David.
And I'm Karis. Yeah, so go ahead and watch Titan Trainer 13's video. It will be in the show notes. And also, our logo was designed by David and coloured by my brother Sam. And also, our intro music was composed by Josh Reed.
Thanks for listening.